couldn't tell if there was a little bit of an attitude there. Once again, we've seen this guy how many times already? Good afternoon to everyone. Again, for the third time. I love, after a long day, to close out the night with a show or a movie. I love doing that, to be able to unwind and come down a little bit. You know, life is so busy. Every single person is doing so many things. I've made the joke before that the new normal is busy, or busy is the new normal. That is it. We all do. Often it is go, go, go time. You just go from the time you get up, and then you find yourself laying back down and going to sleep. It's just very, very quick. We run from thing to thing. We work on projects. We do office-related work. We're on the roads. We're in meetings, assignments, reviews. For me, working on sermons and Bible studies, and the list goes on and on for all of us. We have this list that we have, and we love to have those little checkoffs and be able to have things that get done. We all have that. After a long day, I enjoy sitting down with the family and watching a show. It's just something I like. It's kind of mindless, but that's probably why I really like it. It's mindless. You just get to sit there and watch something. I will say it's extremely difficult in the first place to even find a show. To be able to find a show, it is amazing. We have Netflix and we have Prime and we have you have all of the Hulu and all those things. There are a bazillion, that's not a real number, but there are so many shows and you can't find anything. There's so many things out there. There are so many inappropriate shows that it's hard to find something suitable even to watch. Very hard. There are things I don't mind seeing, especially if it's part of history, and a lot of it has to do with war movies or something like that. I don't mind seeing it. It's not something that you enjoy seeing, but it's part of history, especially if you watch documentaries or even war-related movies, that sort of thing. But there are other things that I don't want to see that just ruin any show that it is in. And I'll tell you, the thing that ruins a show for me right from the start is sex. Why they have to put it in, I don't know. But it ruins any show. Can't stand it. There are other things that I don't mind seeing, but the family isn't interested in, and so on. So finding a show isn't easy. Although I could list all the things that ruin shows, I'm not going to do that. They're a long list. You were left with very few shows. But one thing that will kill a show for us very quickly is the cursing of or the taking of God's name in vain. And that is something that they put into so much. There's no time that taking God's name in vain is good, but there are certain slurs, and I definitely won't give you an example of that slur, but there are certain slurs that it just gives your body a jolt anytime that you hear it. Certain things of taking God's name in vain, you hear it, and it's so loud, it's so jarring. I won't say that I would rather hear other cuss words, but in comparison, I think I would. I definitely would. It just is such a jolt to our bodies. There's a movie that I know that would have been up there in one of my favorites. I would put it up there as one of my favorites, except it had this type of cursing throughout the whole thing. And I was younger when I watched it, and I did. I watched the whole thing when I was younger, not something I think I could do anymore. It just is something, I turned it off. It bothers me a lot. But when I was younger, I watched it. But even then, I hated it every time that it was said. It echoes in your ears when you hear it. It's so harsh. But then there is the taking God's name in vain that we hear many times every single day. And we hear it all the time. The words, oh my God. And you hear that constantly into everything. Just pours out of people's mouths all the time. You can't escape it. And if you turned off everything that had oh my God or OMG in it, you wouldn't need a television. You wouldn't need a radio. You wouldn't need any of that if you turned off something with that. You can't be in the department store without hearing a woman say something like, oh my God, that is a beautiful shirt. It's unrelated, doesn't make sense, but that's how we use it. Not we as in us, the world. Same thing, you could hear a guy referring to how good his steak is, and on and on and on, just using the term, oh my God. If you watch any home improvement show, those would be the three most prominent words that you will hear. If you watch anything that is high school related, a show or movie, those are the three most prominent words you are going to hear. If you watch any reality TV, those words will be the three most prominent words that you hear. If you watch anyone on television who could possibly even win anything, that is the three most prominent words that you will hear. There are many variations of the words that people use that are taking God's name in vain. And we get so used to it, we don't even really realize what is taking God's name in vain. I'll tell you a little bit. I'll get off the notes a little bit. I was working at the steel mill, worked at a steel mill for quite a few years, and you get to learn all kinds of stuff. And there was one man in particular that I had to work with. He was over one of the departments, and it was the harsh taking God's name in vain, and it was every other word. And it got so on my nerves that I said, could you just not, when I'm around, could you just not talk? And no, I didn't say that. I said, can you not do that? And he said, what are you talking about? I'm glorifying God's name. I use it all the time. And from that day forward, I tried not to work with him all that much. But that's, people just don't even understand things when it comes to that, where we're supposed to be, how we're supposed to hold that name. But there are other things that people use, and they're called euphemisms. We understand these. Found this on dictionary.com, which has a neat feature to it. It's the history of words. I don't use it much, but I found it interesting in this, and I've used it a couple times, but the history of words. I mean, there's people that dive way into these things. And it said this. It said, gosh, golly, and gee casually express surprise or excitement, right? Well, yes, but when they were first introduced to the English language, these short words had a much more serious origin and purpose. Where did golly, gosh, and gee come from? While this folksy trio are informal interjections, they are also euphemistic alterations of the word God, or in this case of G, Jesus. Of the three, gosh is recorded the earliest, around 1750 to 1760. That was surprising. Golly is dated around 1840 to 1850. Last but not least, G is an Americanism. We get to claim that one all for ourselves. Tracked back to 1890 to 1895. And it says, so what is a euphemistic alteration? Euphemisms substitute a mild or vague expression for one that is considered to be offensive, harsh, or vulgar. Another way is that it doesn't really change the meaning of them all that much. You can use them in the same way as the harsh ones, but it really doesn't change the meaning. It's just a little bit easier on the ears. They are euphemisms for the word God or Jesus. And both names, God and Jesus, are names that we want to carry with great honor and respect. We want to hold it high. Let's go to Exodus 20. Right when I say that, everybody says, I know where we're going. So Exodus 20, Israel just entered into a covenant with God. Exodus 20 is the Ten Commandments. Exodus 20 and verse 7. We'll just read one. Exodus 20 and verse 7 says, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. For the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Some Jews refrain from even saying the name Yahweh in fear that they would misuse this command. They are so afraid of this command that they didn't want to misuse it. So they got rid of it altogether or used other words in referencing God. Is that what we're supposed to get from this command? You know what? God is such an angry, if we can't even say his name correctly or we can't say this or that, he's going to get really mad at us. Is that what we're to get from this? Take a look quickly to see what the literal meaning was for this command. So I have three quick points here, just a few ways that someone could take God's name in vain in history all the way to where we're standing now, how that could happen. Number one, the first one, and we're not going to spend a long time on these, very short. To swear falsely by God's name. To swear falsely by God's name. Here's a little blurb from the Tanakh commentary. And I will say at the beginning, it's kind of hard to hear what they're talking about, but they clarify it at the end. It says, assertions in court, in public affairs, and even in ordinary conversation were often backed up with conditional self-curses, swearing, that would take effect if the swearer's assertion were false or his promise unfulfilled. So then it gives some ideas of what they even just said. So typical formulations were, by the life of the Lord, I will or will not, dot, dot, dot. So I'm going to put God's name right into that, swear based on that. Another one was, may the Lord do such and such to me if I did or didn't, dot, 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 whatever it might be. It says the swearer proved his sincerity by invoking punishment from God who cannot be deceived or evaded. A false oath would show contempt for God by implying that the swearer does not fear his punishment. So you're swearing by God's name, yet you don't follow through. But you're putting God's name in something, and maybe you don't follow through, maybe you do, that was using his name recklessly. Let's go to Matthew 5. Matthew 5. And we're working towards something. Matthew 5. Matthew 5 and verse 33. Matthew 5 and verse 33. And I will say, in my Bible, it says at the title there, it says, Jesus forbids oaths. And that's not exactly, in my opinion, correct when you study this. It is Jesus forbids frivolous oaths. That is what we're talking about here. So verse 33, it says, again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is its footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. Without going into a lot of detail, the overall lesson Jesus is teaching here was the importance of being truthful, having truthfulness, backing up your own words without just putting an oath to it, to be an honest people. He wasn't necessarily referencing all oaths, but frivolous ones. Not just putting your hat in the ring every time, just making a frivolous oath about this and that and dragging God's name into it. The culture at that time had a convoluted way of looking at things, and this is what he was addressing. Saying, people look at this in a wrong way when it comes to oaths. If God's name was used in an oath, it was binding. So if somebody did put God's name in the oath, now you're bound to it. You have to do it. But if God's name was not used in an oath, it was not so binding. You could actually go back on that. Well, I didn't use God's name in it, so I don't have to do what I said I would do. They could swear by God or swear by other things in heaven or earth. If it was something other than God, they could feel free to completely break that oath. It's extremely dishonest. Jesus was saying, that's not how our people are to live. If you're going to be a follower of mine, that's not how you live. A point to take from this is God is involved in all oaths, whether his name is used or not. Why? Because it's based on being truthful, his honest people, that our word matters. Verse 37 says, but let your yes be yes, and your no, no, for whatever is more than these is from the evil one. Be truthful in what you will say. He is saying here that someone who is dishonest in their oaths, that it doesn't come from something good, but something evil, that we want to be an honest people. Number two, the second way. Second way is to devalue his, God's, to devalue his name by making it of little significance. Using it in a wrong way, this is something we covered in the introduction. Using certain phrases such as, oh my God, and on and on and on and on, there's many of those. When we are excited, when we're angry, bored, surprised, has nothing to do with God. That's how people can use it. When God's name holds no value coming out of our mouths, we're making it of little significance. Something that was interesting, I just real quick study on this, looked this up. There's about 150 times that the Bible uses my God, and it's done in reverence and awe and fear and love towards my God. It's not using it frivolous. And that's a phrase that is used quite a bit. Number three, using it in thoughtless worship. Third one, using it in thoughtless worship. This one is also careless speech and often make oneself sound more religious. You don't hear this a lot in the Church of God. You don't hear this a lot from anyone. I wouldn't say a lot. You don't hear this in anybody in the room. And if it ever does come up, it's not often. We just don't talk that way. But phrases such as praise Jesus, thank you Jesus, especially in situations that it doesn't fit. And you can hear that. You can hear that a lot. I've heard it a lot when talking to people. It may be used to sound religious, but used aimlessly and minimizes, again, God's name. We could do that, too, in our speech. We could do it in our prayers. We can do it how we talk if we're not mindful. Not taking God's name in vain is something that we want to take seriously. Handling his name, how we do it. It matters how you approach God. It matters how you handle his name with care. And I'd say the church knows this about the third commandment. It is the third commandment. We know the third commandment. I think we obey the third commandment. I think that we do that quite well. But is that all this command is talking about? So that was a really kind of a long introduction to actually get to the sermon. Is that what this command is talking about? Only. If it was, it would be enough. If that's what God says, yes, what comes out of your mouth, that's all that meant for that command, it would be enough. It's something so valuable, it would be very significant, is very significant, but there's more to it, to that command, than just that. It has to do with an oath that all of God's people have taken. It's an oath that we are in. It's an oath that we have taken with him. What does an oath mean, then? It means a solemn appeal to God to witness to the truth of a statement or sacredness of a promise. Something that is agreed to be done. When you've agreed to it, and you said yes, my yes will be yes, my no will be no, and I said yes, I'm going to do it, you're within that oath. Let's go back to Exodus 20 and read verse 7 again. Exodus 20, verse 7. Again, it says, "You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. For the Lord will not hold him guiltless." That comes with a punch there. "Who takes his name in vain." Some people have argued that you have the first and second commandment, and they seem so huge, and all of a sudden it takes a deep dive to just don't misuse his name. And I disagree with that statement, because I think misusing his name is a big sin. It is something that we don't want to do. But say people say, why is there such a big difference between the first two commandments and then you have this? Well, because there's also a lot to it. It is equal. It is big. So Exodus 20, verse 7, Zondervan points out that a literal rendering is, and get this, "You shall not lift the name of Yahweh, your God, to falsehood." It says the idiom, "lift the name," refers to oath-taking. It's what you took. It was that oath. We've quickly covered oaths already. But another way to read this passage is also, "You shall not carry the name of God in vain." You should not carry it. To take, to lift, to carry. One partial way to look at this is when you take, lift, or carry the name of God, you become a partner with God in that oath, how you handle what you've entered into. To mishandle that is mishandling God. With that in mind, what happened just prior to receiving the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20? What happened? Let's go to Exodus 19. Exodus 19. He more or less was going to show them what carrying that name was going to be. Exodus 19, verse 4. Exodus 19, verse 4 says, "You have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself." Isn't it interesting? Throughout the Bible, he reintroduces or tells them again and again their history. I mean, we did it during the Bible study. You read the Bible all the way through, and it's again and again and again and again, just saying, "This is what I've done for you." Verse 5, "Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant," we're going to enter into something, he says, "then you shall be special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. If you will obey my voice and if you will keep my covenant," entering into that agreement with me, "then you will be a special treasure, a special possession." He's laying down what this agreement will entail. And it's a binding agreement. You don't just say yes and then don't follow through. It's a binding agreement with God. Verse 6, "And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests," something that carries through even to the New Testament and never changed, "and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel." Verse 7, "So Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before them all these words which the Lord commanded him." These words are now presented to the people, given to the people. This is the oath you're going to enter into, or not. This is what you have before you. Verse 8. "Then all the people answered together and said, 'All that the Lord has spoken, we will do.' So Moses brought back the words of the people to the Lord." They made a promise to follow the words of God and to keep his covenant. But what were they to be? While they were to be a kingdom of teachers and a holy nation, they were to be holding something up differently than all other nations. They were to walk differently. They were to teach, be examples. Were they to do that just within themselves, or was it a teaching nation for others? The goal, to teach all others. In essence, they made an agreement to carry the name of God, present God to all other nations, all other peoples around the world, or at that time where they were. To be an example to the surrounding nation, God was placing his name on them as lights to the world. He was placing it on them. Let's go to number 6. Number 6. It's a beautiful passage titled The Priestly Blessing. Great title. Numbers 6, verse 22. Numbers 6, verse 22. And it said, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron. Again, Numbers 6, verse 22, now 23. Speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, this is the way you shall bless the children of Israel, and say to them, and this beautiful blessing happens, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. That's a beautiful set. That's what we want, absolutely. But then verse 27 wraps it up. So they shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them. So they were to carry God's name and lift God's name and take God's name and wear it. It was a blessing. To do that, great favor from God would fall upon them if they carried his name well. But they were to carry God's name. God's name was put on them. Well, what is in a name then? What is that? I did a longer study on what is a name. We hear that all the time through the Bible about the name. Well, the IVP commentary mentioned something that many of the commentaries actually talked about. And I picked this one. They were pretty much saying the same thing. They said someone's name was believed to be intimately connected to that person's being and essence. So carrying a name was carrying God, carrying who he was. God was that name. So they are their name. Let's go to Ecclesiastes 7. Ecclesiastes 7. Ecclesiastes 7, we'll just read one verse here, and we use this verse in different ways, and all correctly, I mean, there's different ways to be able to look at this, but looking at this here, verse 1 says, a good name, again, Ecclesiastes 7, verse 1 says, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. And it's doing a contrast, because obviously we love the moment of birth and all that happens there. But at first, you can look at this verse and immediately knowing it's referring to reputation, how a person lives their life. But that is only a small part of the picture. It's bigger than that. A good name refers to, as the IVP said, the person's being and essence, that good name. In Hebrew, this word for good name means as a mark or memorial of an individual or the individuality, by implication, honor, authority, and character. So depending on how you live your life and that name that you carry and what that represents. Jameson Fawcett Brown adds to it by saying, character, a godly mind and life, not mere reputation with man, but what a man is in the eyes of God, with whom the name and reality are one. Meaning what's on the inside matches what's on the outside. The actions that we take are the same. That quality of a person. In other words, a good name is when the godly heart and reputation are the same. Because there's people, you can lose your reputation. You can have a fabulous reputation, and the person inside doesn't match it. You can hide that. I can hide it. You can't hide it from God. But I could hide it, and you could never know it was there. And I could have a great reputation, and all of a sudden, you see this with a lot of athletes and people that are in the limelight and people that have just a lot of fame. And all of a sudden, they are great until something's found out, and then they fall from that. Because you realize, oh, they don't have a great reputation. You see that quite a bit. It looked like it. They were hiding it. But what we are asked to have is a good name when the godly heart and reputation are the same. Character is attached to the name. As an example, let's say that you're working on a project. Maybe you're painting a room, you're building shelves, you're working on a car, whatever it might be. And a friend tells you, you know what? I asked so-and-so to be able to come help because I thought having a third set of hands would be really good. So I asked so-and-so to help. And you say, I don't trust so-and-so. Why did you do that? I don't trust so-and-so to help. They don't do good work. They don't stay on task. They don't listen. What did we demonstrate? That a person's character was placed on his name. All you had to say was their name, and all of a sudden all their characteristics came up, and you said, oh, wait, I didn't trust them. I don't want them to come help. But the opposite is also true. If you said, I asked so-and-so to come help, and you say, great, they're always trustworthy, they're always hardworking, they always do good work, I'm glad you asked for that person. All you had to say was their name. Their name was connected to their character of who they are. Barnabas, being a good example of that, gave a sermon not too long ago about that. The apostles gave him his name because he was an encourager. Barnabas meaning encourager. The name Barnabas expressed the good character he possessed, so much so that the apostles said, you know what? You are identified as encourager because that it exudes who you are. It comes out of who you are. When they heard his name, that was the character that came to mind. Powerful of a name. Let's go to Isaiah 9. Turn over to Isaiah 9. Isaiah 9, we'll read one verse again here. A powerful name, Isaiah 9. And verse 6, we read this oftentimes around the feast, millennial setting. Isaiah 9, verse 6 says, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder. And his name will be called Wonderful Counselor." And you take that comma out, that's all one title, Wonderful Counselor. It goes together, it's not two. "Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." But his name will be called these things. His name was his character of Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace, all attached to that name. Descriptions and characteristics of Jesus Christ. His name will be called, expressing and representing what is already there, what has already came out, the characteristics that he possesses. Now, these are his character traits. Now, number 6, verse 27, we don't have to turn there. We just read that, where it said, "So they shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them." Two things then happen. When looking at this, Jesus Christ and the name there, or God's name, two things happen. One, we come under those characteristics of God. We fall under that of Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. That if following him, obedient to him, serving him, he will keep us and his face will shine upon us. He'll be gracious to us. He will lift his countenance upon us and he will give us peace. Well, we see that. Now, the second thing is by placing his name upon his people, there is a covenant agreement and an oath to follow and obey him, to exude his character traits, to become more like him. They are taking on his character traits that represent them as God's people, character traits of him, that we put on a uniform that more or less looks like him, more and more. This is what was explained of the angel of God. Let's go to Exodus 23. Exodus 23, starting in verse 20. Exodus 23, and verse 20, says, "Behold, I send an angel before you to keep you in the way, and to bring you into this to the place which I have prepared." So the angel of the Lord is the one who would become Jesus Christ. He was doing two things. One, to keep them in the way, staying on that path that they were supposed to guide them. Two, to bring them into the place God had prepared, the promised land. That was what their focus was, to be able to get there. This word keep in the Tanakh is properly rendered to guard. He was going to lead the way and bring them to the promised land. If Israel was obedient to the angel, then they would fall under his protection and blessings. These are listed out when you read the earlier part of the chapter. Verse 21 says, "Beware," and we can stop there for a second. And the New King James and King James Version has the word beware. Beware has more of the use of meaning to be on guard against, to be cautious of. When you're reading that, how we use it now, beware. And that's not necessarily, that doesn't fit. Again, the Tanakh has pay heed. I think that's a better translation, meaning to pay attention to listen to consider. That's what they were to do. A better translation of that. But many other translations use the heed as well. But the rest of verse 21, so beware, take heed of him and obey his voice. Watch him, consider him. Do not provoke him, for he will not pardon your transgressions. Why? For my name is in him. For my name is in him. That's saying that he is as I am. We are the same. We are one together in action, thought, and purpose. And he carries my name well. He lifts it up well. Hold your finger here. Let's go to John 17. We'll come back. John 17. Jesus Christ, prayer here to God, the Father. John 17, verse 20. John 17, verse 20. Says, I do not pray for these alone, but also for those who will believe in me through their word. So not just the disciples, he's talking about all of us that are sitting here today, through time that read the word, who believe and follow. So this is including, verse 20 very much includes us. You can put your name in there. Verse 21. That they all may be one as you, Father, and me, and I in you. That they also may be one in us, that the world may believe you sent me. And the glory which you gave me, I have given them. That they may be one, just as we are one. We read that every Passover. God the Father and Jesus Christ are one. And it's beautiful how Jesus Christ carried his name was perfect. Again, together in action, together in thought, together in purpose. What does Jesus desire for his followers in this passage? And I already just got out of that. But in John 17, verse 23, John 17, verse 23 says, I and them and you and me, that they may be made perfect in one. It's the same calling, the same desire, the same need that he did. Perfect in one, that the world may know that you have sent me and I have loved them as you have loved me. Jesus desires that his people become one. That takes obedience, it takes work, it takes dedication and knowledge of his word. What does it say in the verse 17? It says, sanctify them by your truth, your word is truth. Knowledge and understanding of his word is extremely important. How else do we know what his name is? What are we lifting up? How do we walk? How do we live? How do we act? Powerful stuff. Let's turn back to Exodus 23. Verse 22, Exodus 23, still talking about the angel of the Lord here. Exodus 23, verse 22 says, but if you indeed obey my voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. Obey his voice and do all that I speak. Obedience and adherence to the covenant that they, again, agreed to. What they agreed to do, that oath. Is that any different for us? We look at these old stories, but does it change? Is it different for you and me? I think you've already seen that. It's no different for us. It's exactly the same. The message continues. Let's go to Ephesians 4. Ephesians 4. We get told very similar things. Ephesians 4. Starting in verse 20. We'll pick it up in verse 20. Ephesians 4, verse 20 says, but you have not so learned Christ, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus. It's exactly what we have done. We have heard him. We have been taught by him through God's word. Then it says the truth is in Jesus. Well, what did we read in Exodus 23? It said, my name is in him, completely my character is in him, truth on the highest level is in him. Verse 22 here says that you put off. And there are other sermons that you will hear, and we'll go into more detail of what that means. But looking at put off, it's taking off an old filthy garment. You put on you had this old filthy garment. It's who you were previously. It's how you walked, how you thought, how you talked, how you acted, all of those things. It's what you wore, and you took it off. Take that off. That filthy old garment, you're going to cast it aside. Verse 22, that you put off concerning your former conduct, who you were, the old man which grows corrupt according to the deceitful lusts. And be renewed in the spirit of your mind. The spirit of your mind is more or less your mental attitude. Your mental attitude is your mindset, how you think of things. But then verse 24, he's wanting you to pick something up. He's wanting you to wear something. He's wanting you to lift it, to carry it, to be a representative. Verse 24, he says, in that you put on a fresh and clean garment. It's a renewal. You picked up something else. It's like a jersey. It's like a uniform. It's something you put on to identify who you belong to. But identifying who you belong to is how you act and think and talk and all those things and who you represent. So you're putting on something new. The rest of verse 24, and that you put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. You picked it up. You're carrying it to be a representative to those around us, how we walk in this life. It's a powerful message. Who is the new man we are putting on? Who is the new man that's being created in us? It's Jesus Christ. It's like a uniform that identifies who you're belonging to. You know, you never watch a professional team that everybody's wearing different uniforms. Nope. All the uniforms on one team look alike. You know exactly who they belong to, what's expected of them, what team they're playing for, who's the coach, all of those things. And that's what it's talking about here, that uniform that you put on. Our qualities are to be his qualities. Our actions are to be his actions. Our thoughts are to be his thoughts. Well, what are those? Well, here's a short little list. Let's go back to verse 1. Verse 1, same chapter. We'll just see a few things here. Ephesians 4, verse 1 says, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of your calling. Same thing. We entered into an oath. Same thing. With which you were called. We were called to this way of life, to be led by God's Spirit in the way of truth. We entered that call and entered into that covenant relationship with God. It's no different than Exodus 19. We've entered into it with God. Now he's going to list of qualities of Jesus Christ, God's qualities, that are to live within us. We are to lift them, wear them, be examples of them. Verse 2 says, with all lowliness, so humility and gentleness, and long-suffering, we can stop there for a second. Often we equate long-suffering with patience. Now, patience is a part of long-suffering. Long-suffering isn't always part of patience. So patience is a part of long-suffering, but there's added meanings. Long-suffering here, I just found three added meanings to it. Long-suffering means, one, patiently enduring wrongs or difficulties. You continue forward no matter how difficult something is. Very different than patient. Patience is within that, but you continue to move forward. Another one is having endured mental or physical discomfort for a protracted period of time patiently or without complaint. Long-suffering. You're dealing with anguish and problems and trials, and you continue to move forward. And the third one that I found was patiently bearing continual wrongs or troubles. There are people out there that are great examples of long-suffering. They've dealt with a lot, and they continue to move forward, no matter what. I think it's great. Barnes adds, bearing patiently with foibles, faults, and infirmities of others. You can have long-suffering with the people that you're around. It's definitely a quality of God directed towards us. He bears patiently with our faults and issues. I know he has with me. I have no problem ever talking about that. God's been extremely patient, long-suffering with me. I've added a lot to his plate. He's saying here we are to do the same thing, not asking us to do anything different. Verse 2 says, with all lowliness and gentleness and long-suffering, bearing with one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Incredible qualities to have within God's church. But he's saying we all need these things. We need them. That was what was being built and developed within us. Well, how? Verse 4. There is one body, one Spirit, just as you were called into one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God, Father of all. Talk about unity. Who is above all and through all and in you all. One God is in us all. Supposed to have one picture, all the qualities of him, to look that way, to be able to look that way, all in all. His name is in all of us too? How are we to treat his name? Let's go to Leviticus 19. Leviticus 19. Leviticus 19, we'll look at just a few verses here, 3. Leviticus 19, and verse 1. Leviticus 19, starting at the beginning of the chapter, says, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to all the congregation of the children of Israel, and say to them, You shall be holy." What garment, what jersey did we put on? That was what was expected of us. "You shall be holy, striving for holiness, striving for that. For I, the Lord, your God, am holy." It's a clear statement. If we are God's people, then we must be holy, for he is holy. How we represent him, because we do represent him. It's a garment we put on. That is the covenant we entered into, and that is the name that we lift. If you go through this chapter, you'll read a lot of "you shall" and "you shall not." It's instruction of how to be holy, how to build good character within you. And with that, we have verse 12. Let's go ahead and go to verse 12. This is a great reference. Verse 12 is a great reference to Exodus 20 and verse 7. But this verse 12 says, "And you shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." Nor shall you profane the name of your God. Profane simply means to treat with irreverence or disrespect. Is that only for when you speak? Is that only for the words that come out of your mouth? Is that only when you say something about God? Or is it how you speak? Is it how you act? Is it how you think? Is it all of those things? Well, let's go to Proverbs 30. Let's turn over to Proverbs 30. Proverbs 30. In verse 9. Proverbs 30 and verse 9. I think here shows both ends of the spectrum. Negatively, both ends of the spectrum. Verse 9. Says, "Lest I be fool and deny you, and say, Who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God." Both examples here would be profaning the name of God, to be rich and rely only on yourself. That's why there's so many warnings. It's not, money is not evil. It's how people end up loving money. That becomes the problem. That's why there's so many warnings about the rich was this type of a thing. But to be rich and rely only on yourself, you definitely would not be promoting God. But to be poor and steal, both are not glorifying God, and both are not actions that we want. Both would not show anyone else anything about God except for a negative review of God. Our actions within us must be sermons to everyone around us. That might be the only sermon anybody ever sees. We have to make it good sermons, how we live, but we are literally lifting up God's name, representatives, wearing God to everyone around us. They can be learning without preaching at them because people do not like being preached at. That is not how the world responds by any means. Chances of them being called is up to God, but we can be an implement within that. Many things have been done throughout history in the name of God. If you're ever a historian, you like history or any of that, you know that there is a lot of things through history that's been done in the name of God that have been horrendous. God did not put his stamp on that. God was very misrepresented, and to this day, there are people that absolutely either hate him, don't believe in him, all of that based on a history. They say, well, why did God do that? We say, well, God didn't. Let's go to Matthew 5. It was hard to do a message like this without Matthew 5 in it, another part of Matthew 5. Matthew 5 and verse 13. Matthew 5 and verse 13. Because it's basically saying all of this, what we've talked about. Matthew 5 verse 13 says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. You can't hide that example. If we did, that's a problem. But one way to look at this is you cannot hide that at all. How you live cannot be hidden. And most importantly, you cannot be hidden from God. But people see your example. People will see. Sometimes it might not be look like they're learning anything, but we are teaching at all times. Verse 15 says, "Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Our godly examples are not to be hidden, but to give light." I love this because you could dive into this more, and we probably will at some later time, but it's talking about you can't not be a light to the world, but then it's talking about within your own house. How you are behind closed doors and how you are out in the open need to be the same. That same quality of person. But our godly examples are not to be hidden. They are to be a light. Doesn't mean that you're waiting around to open up the Bible to any passerby. Again, people do not like to be preached at. It's not how people respond. Actually, they will respond, and it's not normally in a good way. But this means how you live is different from how the world lives, and it will be noticeable. And I've said this before, and I'll say it many times again. The further we go into our future, the darker this world will get, the more we will shine. Sometimes we'll be getting attention we probably don't want, but it's how it's going to be. We will shine brighter and brighter. Verse 16 says, "Let your light so shine before men." We don't change who we are to strive to be like Jesus Christ depending on who we are around. Well, I'm with my Christian friends, so I'm going to act Christian. But when I'm with my steel mill friends, I'm going to be like them. It's not how it works. He is saying, let your light shine at all times. It becomes who you are. In the most difficult times and the good times, it doesn't matter. Let that light shine. Verse 16 again says that that they may see your good works. Good works. It's God's way of life. It's God's qualities that live within us. It's his name within us. It's his name that we're lifting. Why? Well, verse 16, this is why. This is why the third commandment. This is why it was commanded to them. This is why Israel needed to do it. And it says, and glorify, let's read the whole thing. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works, and you do those things to glorify your Father in heaven, the name that you're lifting up to the world around you, to your families, to your friends, to other people in this room. By the godly attributes and characteristics we have developed within us, glorifies the originator of those character traits. They're his. We're to be teachers to all of those in the world. When the world sees God's attributes being lived out by his people, then the world is living or learning about God, whether they want to or not. That's not the point. They will be learning. The opposite is also true when the world sees one of God's people living by the world's attributes and misrepresenting God and his name, which is in us, we would not be carrying his name well. We're teaching no matter what we do. But what are we teaching? Our actions are to be the actions that glorify God. I did not put the scripture down for this one. But let's go ahead and head back to 1 Samuel. I said that we're going to that scripture, 1 Samuel 12. 1 Samuel 12. And verse 22. Very much has a lot to do with the third commandment. 1 Samuel 12, verse 22. Says, "For the Lord will not forsake his people for his great name's sake, because it has pleased the Lord to make you his people." For his great name's sake. Again, Kiel and Dielich mentioned that it means for the great name which he, God, had acquired in the sight of all nations. How did he acquire it? By his people. Now, great. Really, God did a lot of great miracles. He did a lot of things that people would have recognized and seen, but it was by the people that were to represent God that he would have acquired in the sight of all nations if they would have carried his name correctly. The people were representatives of God. They were carrying the name of God as we are to carry the name of God today. So in closing, the third commandment You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain is bigger than how we speak his name. It is part of it, absolutely, very important part of it. I'm not downing that or saying that's just a small part, it's a big part. What comes out of our mouth matters, matters a lot. How we handle God's name matters a lot. Not diminishing that. Yes, how we speak his name is within the command. We don't do that so much anymore, but how we swore to God's name matters. To mistreat that was a sin. But also God is within us. His name is upon us, in us, and directing us. Our actions, our words, our thoughts can also take or carry God's name wrongly. That would also be a sin if we did that, carried it wrongly. We need to keep in mind that we are bearing, lifting God's name at every moment of our lives. Let us be lights of God's name.